Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
In every container of Cascade dishwasher detergent is a small amount of surfactant. This chemical compound is what removes the dried remnant of tomato sauce from your plates without leaving residue or filling your dishwasher up with suds.
It powers through your toughest messes better than the competition. The first time. Now that's clean.
So how is this miracle product made?
Chemistry must be respected.
All right, bear with me for a moment. You start with ethane gas, dilute it with steam, and push it through a 1500-degree furnace until the ethane molecule cracks, creating ethylene. Heat the ethylene, mix with oxygen, pass through a reactor, and once it cools, you wind up with ethylene oxide. Mix that with alcohol and a catalyst, heat and cool once more, and now you've got a product that's helped Cascade producer Procter & Gamble become a leading competitor in the $1.4 billion dishwasher detergent market in the United States.
Yes, science!
But the lesser-known company, BASF, actually manufactures the surfactants at the start of the process. BASF, a German company, makes a variety of chemical products that wind up in all sorts of things. Toothpaste, freezers, sneakers, you name it.
At BASF, we don't make a lot of the products you buy. We make a lot of the products you buy better. BASF.
Missing from my little chemistry lesson? The dangerous cancer-causing byproducts created at each stage of the process. According to a newly published investigation from ProPublica, BASF manufacturing plants throughout the country release air pollutants, exposing some 1.5 million people in the U.S. to elevated cancer risk. For communities living near these chemical plants, some predominantly Black and many working class, environmental protections do little to protect air quality and mitigate their increased risk of cancer. ProPublica reporter Layla Yunus co-wrote this piece, and she joins me now to discuss more and explain all of this to us. Hey there, Layla. Thanks so much for coming on The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
How are these plants releasing these dangerous chemicals into the air? I mean, they're making the products inside these facilities. How are the byproducts escaping and affecting the communities nearby?
The byproducts usually escape through large industrial chimneys called stacks, but they can also be released through leaks in the facility. For example, if you have a structure cooking a compound, well, the openings around the structure can be a release point for some of those toxic chemicals.
And the communities near these facilities, can you tell me a little bit about them and generally where they are?
The communities near these facilities can be anywhere from 1 or several miles away to right across the street. The BASF facility in Whitestone, South Carolina, is actually right across the street from a post office, and there are several houses nearby. The facility in Port Arthur, Texas, however, is a little bit further away from some of the neighborhoods that you see near it.
And how are people in these communities being affected? What did you find?
What we found through the EPA model that we used for our analysis was that these chemical compounds, these toxic chemicals, can disperse miles away from facilities. In some cases, the chemical ethylene oxide, for example, it can disperse very, very far away and elevate cancer risk for people beyond 50 kilometers.
And what is the EPA's role here, Environmental Protection Agency? Is this something that they monitor? How does it work?
The EPA says that it strives to protect the largest amount of Americans possible from a cancer risk above 1 in 1 million. That means if 1 million Americans are exposed to a concentration of a toxic chemical over a presumed lifetime of 70 years, you can expect one person to develop cancer from that exposure. They also say that no American should be exposed above 1 in 10,000. The way that they try to use these thresholds and regulate with them is by requiring facilities to add pollution reduction equipment to their chemical facilities. Mm-hmm. The problem comes in the way that the rules for these equipments are actually written. Our investigation found that in many cases, industry sort of comes in through the back door at the initial stages of this rulemaking process. And the result is more lax pollution reduction equipment rules, which expose more Americans to higher rates of toxic air pollution.
How do these EPA standards here in the U.S. compare to like the standards and practices in Europe?
In Europe, the standards are sort of built on a different system. In the U.S., regulators sort of ask the question, how much pollution can the environment absorb without people or the environment being harmed? In Germany, what we found is that regulators are really taking care of the problem on the front end, monitoring the amount of pollution escaping the actual chimneys of the plants and doing that regularly. In the U.S., there isn't a requirement at the federal level for state governments who administer the Clean Air Act to actually regulate and regularly measure what is coming out of facilities. Rather, they usually rely on modeling exercises prior to the actual permit being approved to make those critical decisions about what communities can be exposed to.
Got it. Are the communities near these facilities aware of the toxic dangers that these plants pose to them and to their health? And is there any resistance from the communities against these plants and the way they operate?
Communities in some of the more renowned hotspots, such as Cancer Alley, Louisiana, are painfully aware that what they breathe every day can hurt their health. Other communities are not aware. In Whitestone, South Carolina, near BASF's facility, we were the first to inform residents that the air they're breathing could increase their risk of developing cancer.
What was their reaction?
Surprise. I think we typically expect toxic air pollution, for example, to smell really bad, to sort of make the leaves on the trees sick looking. Ethylene oxide, the chemical being released in Whitestone, South Carolina, is colorless and odorless. And so it can be really difficult to actually have any idea that you're actually being exposed to one of the most toxic chemicals emitted by American industry.
How did you get this information? I mean, this seems like something that the government should be tracking.
It is, in fact. This information came from an analysis of data from an EPA model called RISI, the Risk Screening Environmental Indicators Model. That model has been in development over 30 years, but the EPA has never used it to actually map where toxic hotspots exist around the country. ProPublica did that in a first-of-its-kind analysis, and the result is a map pocketed with hotspots of cancer-causing air pollution. Users can visit our map on our website and can search their address and see where the nearest hotspot to them is located.
Tell me about a woman you interviewed, Holly Walker, who worked near the BASF plant.
So Holly Walker and her husband moved to upstate South Carolina in the 90s. Her husband actually worked for a different chemical plant called Milliken, about 10 miles away from where they lived. Incidentally, they live down the street from BASF's plant in Whitestone. And if you visit her home, it's a beautiful, secluded home on a lake, and it's kind of not the setting that you would expect to be one in which residents are exposed to toxic air pollution. You're in the woods. However, what the EPA model that we used for our analysis indicates is that that ethylene oxide exposure down the street can extend far past Holly Walker's home. She had a breast cancer diagnosis in the 90s and a second one in the later part of the 90s. Between those two diagnoses, she worked at the post office right across the street from the BASF plant. Of course, it's impossible for a model to prove a link between a case of cancer and emissions from an industrial facility. However, the model can be used to indicate potential areas of concern, and Whitestone certainly is an area of concern in that EPA model.
So what's the solution here, and where do we go from here? Is this an environment story where a harmful system is too complicated and too entrenched to change? Is there a clear entity responsible and at fault, like the federal regulators or the corporations? What's the path forward?
We focused a lot on the way that German regulators handle toxic air pollution in our story because we wanted to show readers that there is a better and more protective way to regulate these plants. The new Biden EPA has sort of signaled an unprecedented approach to actually tackling toxic air pollution head on, particularly in overburdened communities. They have said that they are even considering revisiting the standard that they consider acceptable, the cancer risk standard that they consider acceptable for residents near plants to be exposed to. At this point, it sort of remains to be seen what the agency is actually going to do to move the needle on toxic air pollution regulation. But we do believe that there is a safer way to operate these facilities. In fact, other countries are already doing it.
Is there anything a responsible consumer can do? I mean, I imagine that you can stop buying pods, Cascade pods for your dishwasher, but then you're buying another pod from another company that might be using a plant in a different community that emits toxic chemicals, right? I mean, what's the responsible path forward for the everyday reader and consumer?
Consumers can make a commitment to buy products that are made with renewable sources. For example, Seventh Generation creates products that come from the palm oil industry. However, that industry has also been linked to bad stuff, human rights violations and deforestation. So ultimately, the solution here is you know, asking our regulators to be better about the way that they regulate sources of toxic air pollution.
Leila, thank you for this work and this journalism and this investigation. And thank you for coming on The Takeaway and talking about it.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Leila Yunus, reporter with ProPublica. She worked on the new piece, The Dirty Secret of America's Clean Dishes.